out that we're going to be using that as a tool tonight, in that the option was to print out 50, 60 song sheets. And what happens to the song sheets is people think, oh, that's neat, I'll take it home. And then you put it underneath last week's newspapers and it gets cycled through. And so we thought, you know, practice some environmental sensitivity and use an electronic paper, electronic song sheet. So what that might mean is folks who are here might want to shift a little bit. I don't know if that's possible. We could angle the screen, but then everybody has to do this. So we thought just kind of make do. What I thought I would do tonight, we are blessed in the Bay Area, particularly in the East Bay, with genuine Buddhist culture as it's arising. Not only are there something like, I was over at the title office today looking at a book on Berkeley, and there are 17 Buddhist monasteries in this area. I thought, wait a minute, I know six. Where did the other, you know? I mean, the Chinese say, yuho, chun sun, the spring mushrooms after the rain, you know, but it's pop, 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 you know, like that. So by golly, we're just rich. And so amidst all that flowering of practice and all of the hours and hours we spend on our zafus, there's also Buddhist culture arising and manifesting in art, in song, in social networking, in Buddhist chaplains, in Buddhist caregiving, Buddhist psychology. If you turn to the pages of Tricycle or Shambhala Sun, there are Buddhist investment counselors. So, by golly, you know. That's what made this country great. You know, so, you know. Right. Why not? You know, I mean, Bernard Madoff could have used one, by golly. So, among that, we have a huge flourishing of Buddhist music, which is, I could say I'm tuned in to Buddhist music worldwide and nationwide, and there aren't many other places that boast Eve Decker, Kevin Griffin, Alan Sanaki, and music that woke the world, right? We have done the above mention, including Betsy Rose, by golly, how could I leave Betsy out? Jennifer Berezon, you know, all of whom are right here within a Tiger Woods drive of where we're standing, you know. So, was that too topical? I guess so. Put a cork in it. I know. Calm down. So, that's amazing, I think, and meant to be celebrated. So we have had two nights called Music in the Dharma, Dharma in the Music. First was at Gil Fronsdahl's down in Redwood City. The second one was right here, and we were threatening to do a third one soon. So, my name is Hung Shur. And as mentioned, I'm the director, not the abbot, of the monastery here, and there's a difference. And I was a Fokie back when. That was 34 years ago, before I became a monk. And I didn't touch a guitar for 25 years, because in the precepts it says monks don't. However, Master Shren Hua, the founder and my teacher in religion, said that it's important that you don't try to imitate my old-fashioned Chinese methods. They might be suited for Chinese speakers and Chinese culture. They are not necessarily suited for contemporary Westerners. So use whatever talents and tools you have to bring the Buddha Dharma to life. So that was kind of my impetus. And as I've confessed before, it was one night, James Barris's 50th birthday, as he sat here on the stage celebrating with you all his 50th birthday, he pulled out his old battered Gibson guitar and fired up Teach Your Children Well, Crosby, Stills, and Nash anthem. And all of you fractious Berkeleyites sang along in perfect tune. It was amazing. right? It's kind of like the Irish, three Irishmen, four opinions, you know. In Berkeley, it's the same, and yet there was total harmony that night because we were all singing along. And I thought, boy, that is a powerful, expedient means. As upaya goes, that's a good one for our time. So I was encouraged to pick up my guitar again. And lo and behold, songs started flowing. So I thought tonight, instead of giving a strict Dharma talk per se, I would do it musically. And those of you who have heard me talk to your Thursday night group before won't be strangers to that. But tonight I thought to organize a little bit in a different context. And you have had the benefit of Eve here while James is on retreat. Is James on retreat? Is that? Yeah. Book tour. And Jennifer has been here, and Alan has been here, so, and Betsy. So this is something that I would like to share with all of you. And start out with this one. It's called Wish to Repay. And the notion is that when I went researching, when you ask the question, what do people do after they wake up? Let's use that buzzword, enlightenment. How many of you watched the PBS show last night on Buddhism? What do you think? Yes? Good? Good critique? Yeah? I didn't see it, but it's online, I discovered, so I will watch. Good. Okay. That's great. It's at, go to pbs.org, and there it is. It's featured on, and it's 2 hours long, is that right? And it's in little segments, but I think they string it together. So it's very nicely done. And I've heard nothing but good comments. So anyway, if you go looking for people who, the stories, the biographies of people who did indeed, in the Mahayana tradition, the Chan tradition that this monastery represents, we don't say enlightenment that much. There is one. There's jiewu. You wake up, literally. From Bud, the root to awaken, Bodhi, Bodhisattva, Buddha, all from the same root. More they say you realize fruition, or you awaken to the Tao. The Tao is a very freight-carrying, letter-carrying word. It carries the mail. That word is the Tao. And when someone awakens, they awaken to the Tao, and how the Tao being kind of the way things are before thought and word. Kind of the operative engine bringing both the world of awakening and the world of duality, the world of consciousness, the world of wisdom and compassion to life. When it manifests in human form, the Tao has merged with the human nature. So, looking into people who realized the Tao, I was surprised what I found. What I found was that, by and large, with few exceptions, the first thing that people do when they wake up is they look for their benefactors to say thank you. Interesting. Gratitude, we heard that word tonight, is the first thing that people think of in many, many, many cases, starting with the Buddha's own disciple, Mahamudgalyayana. In the Pali tradition, he's known as Moggallan, right? What he did, he woke up, he was the Buddha's disciple, foremost in psychic powers. And he woke up and looked for mom. And it wasn't a happy story, sadly. Mom was suffering. She was in the hells as a hungry ghost, and that's another story. That's the story that gave rise to what's called Ulambana. In Japan, it's called Obon, the Obon Matsuri, celebrated all over Asia. Madgayayana repays the kindness of his mother, and he does so. From then on, case by case, people, when they wake up, have a wish to repay kindness. So that's the source of this song. And this is the chorus, and I want you to sing along, if you would please. Let's see how we're gonna do. When you're your own roadie, it's always a kind of a crazy Cross your fingers. Here we go. Okay, here's the chorus. It goes. Thank you to the universe. Thank you to the earth and sky. I may not repay my parents' kindness, but every day I try. That's how it goes. You want to try it? Thank you to the universe. Thank you to the earth and the sky. Whose iPhone? My iPhone. What can I say? That old Wi-Fi doing it. Thank you to the universe. Thank you to the earth and sky. I may not repay my parents' kindness, but every day I try. Okay, later on we're going to say, I may not repay my teacher's kindness. Then we're going to say, I may not repay the planet's kindness. All right, so here we go. People ask me, what did you get from your meditation? Are you enlightened? Have you ended your frustration? The wise men and women who woke up, all those I reviewed, say the highest state is a wish to repay a heart of gratitude. Here comes your part. Thank you to the universe. Thank you to the earth and sky. I may not repay my parents' kindness, but every day I try. How many years did I waste waiting for my prize, for my ship to finally come in, for my good news to arrive? Publishers Clearinghouse? Are any of you waiting for an iPad? Though, but freedom comes not from getting, but from giving it all away. Wise men, when they see the Tao, feel a wish to repay. Here we go. Thank you to the universe. Thank you to the earth and sky. I may not repay my parents' kindness, but every day I try. Let's do it with teachers. Thank you to the universe. Thank you to the earth and sky. I may not repay my teacher's kindness, but every day I try. Let's, how about planets? Thank you to the universe. Thank you to the earth and sky. I may not repay the planet's kindness, but every day when I eat lunch, I ought to think about it. Here we go. Thank you to the universe. Thank you to the earth and sky. Parents, I may not repay my parents' kindness, but every day I try. True story about what people do when they wake up. Funny, huh? So, we who are not yet awake, why wait? Start feeling that gratitude now and saying thank you. Certainly can't hoit, as they say. All right. Now, how about another story? next? Okay. There's, when you start poking around in the stories of the Buddha's life, there's so many threads to tug that pull back an amazing fabric. And one is the Buddha as social reformer. I haven't seen the PBS documentary, so we'll see what, maybe that's already covered, you know, possibly. But in India, the caste system is rigidly set, and it has been forever. Four castes, Brahmins, who are largely priests and functionaries, they are born, Brahmin is a caste. You born into the Brahmin caste, you stay one. And the boundaries are not flexible. There's nothing like upwardly mobile in Indian caste system. It's not through merit, it's through birth. So hereditary. There are Kshatriyas, is the next one down. And Kshatriyas are the ruling caste and also the warriors. The Buddha himself, being a prince, Siddhartha, was a Kshatriya. And again, it's you don't fight your way into the Kshatriya league. You are born that way and you stay that way, and people know the difference. There are the Vaishyas, who are the merchants. And merchants are, their job description is different. Their horizon, you could say, is different, but it's not mobile. You don't go up and down. You stay in that caste, by and large. And I'm giving you, you know, I am ignorant of the real subtleties, but I don't think I'm too far off. Then there are the Kshudras, or the untouchables. And the untouchables caste are so far down from the other three that traditionally, depending on where you were, if you are an untouchable, a Kshudra, and your shadow should fall on a Brahmin or a Kshatriya, they can't wash it off. It's forever a stain. And so the untouchables walk with a bell when they're in the neighborhoods of the others, so that people will hear the bell and know to cross the street to avoid having their shadow touch you. So the plight of the untouchables is quite to our meritocracy in the U.S. is quite or in the West, one person, one vote. It's kind of inconceivable. So for people who are interested in looking into it, Dr. Ambedkar, who created the Dalit form of Buddhism, which is Alan Sanaki just came back from spending 2 or 3 weeks with the new Untouchables Buddhists movement. That's another story. So look up Ambedkar, A-M-B-E-D-K-A-R. Quite a wonderful social reformer. Back to the Buddha. The Buddha, in the midst of a rigid social structure, completely abolished those lines when he ordained men and women into the Buddhist Sangha. So in the Buddhist Sangha, in fact, caste was invisible. It was a non-issue. If you were born untouchable and you cultivated the Dharma, if you were sincere, if you were vigorous, you had the option to become completely awake. And you were second to none. In fact, Brahmins, born Brahmins who didn't have your realization, had to bow to you. They had to get behind you in line. Completely unheard of. Revolutionary, to say the least. Socially, just the most innovative thing that ever happened to Indian social structure. So, just to say, that's one of those threads you tug and you discover, my goodness. So, Sunita, an untouchable, becomes a Brahmin supreme. Let's take a look. This is a true story from literature called the Theragata. The Theragata are the songs of the first Buddhist monks. And there's also something called the Therigata, which is the songs of the first Buddhist women. This is among the very first poetry in history, still recorded with a continuous lineage. It's found in the Pali Canon, the Theragata and the Therigata. Incredible literature. So, here we go. I want to show you how it, show you the, here's the original that I found. I don't know whose translation this was, but this is direct from the Pali. I adapted it so it would be more singable. In a lowly family, I was born, poor, with next to no food. Autobiographical verse by Sunita himself. My work was degrading. I gathered the spoiled, the withered flowers from shrines and threw them away. People found me disgusting, despised me, disparaged me. Lowering my heart, I showed reverence to many. Now, this means he bowed. Sunita had a practice of bowing. He made prostrations, ritual prostrations, as his particular Dharma method. So regardless of whether he was honored or disparaged, he bowed. That was Sunita's practice. One day, he saw the self-awakened, the Buddha, coming into the city, arrayed with a squadron of monks. The Buddha was walking with for alms at the head of the line of, sometimes they say, 1,250 monks going out for alms. So here is the great hero entering the city, supreme of the Magadhans, because the Buddha was born in Magadha. Throwing down my carrying pole, Sunita probably had a pole with buckets, I suspect. You know, that was his job. He threw down his carrying pole and did something unheard of. I approached him to do reverence. Now, the Buddha at this point could have trampled on him, could have ignored him, could have crossed the street to avoid having the untouchable shadow touch him. What did he do? He, the supreme man, stood still out of sympathy just for me and received the bows. So honored this invisible, traif, taboo creature called an untouchable. He honored him by receiving his obeisance, just as if he would from the king. After paying homage to the feet of the teacher, I stood to one side and I requested going forth from him. Sunita plucked up his courage and said, I want to become a monk. Okay? Basically impossible. The compassionate teacher, sympathetic to all the world, said, Ehi bhikkhu, he said, come monk. That was my formal acceptance. He ordained him on the spot and took him into the order. And that was Sunita's beginning as a Sangha member, right then and there. So, change of scene. If this was a James Cameron film, we would now be in the planet, what? Eudora? No. Theodora. Pandora, right. Eudora's an email program, right? So, here we are. Alone I stayed in the woods, untiring. We've now switched. Here is Sunita out in a cave, perhaps, in the forest, wearing his robe. Untiring, I followed the teacher's words. He's practicing the Dharma. He is doing his Vipassana meditation, counting his breath tirelessly, watching rising, falling, just as he, the conqueror, had taught me. In the first watch of the night, I recollected previous lives, meaning the psychic powers started to manifest from his own nature. Sunita was waking up. In the middle watch, I purified the divine eye. He got the psychic power of psychic vision. So this is a standard throughout the Buddhist tradition. In the last, I burst the mass of darkness, which is code talk for woke up, right? They talk about the reason why we, using our conscious mind, are not the same as the Buddha, even though our potential is the same, is this mass of darkness called avidya, ignorance, that covers over our nature. Once that is transformed, the Buddha nature in us manifests exactly as it does in the Buddha, regardless of male, female, ancient, modern, untouchable, Brahman, or even, bless their souls, Democrats. Tea Party Democrats even have the Buddha nature. So he wakes up. Sunita realizes the Tao. Then, as the night was ending and the sun returning, so what a night he had meditating, right? As the night was ending, Indra and Brahma come to pay homage to me, hands palm to palm at their hearts. Who are Indra and Brahma? The chief among gods. So the devas come down to pay homage to this new arhat, the newly awakened former untouchable whose name is Sunita. What do they say to him? They say, homage to you, thoroughbred of men, human, Homage to you, human supreme, whose afflictions are ended. You, dear sir, are worthy of offerings. Supreme irony, right? The former untouchable is getting praised as a thoroughbred of humans by the chief among gods. Seeing me arrayed with a squadron of devas, the teacher, the Buddha, smiled and said, through austerity, celibacy, restraint, and self-control, that's how one is a Brahman. He is a Brahman supreme. Okay, so not by birth, not hereditarily, by merit, by his hard work in the Dharma, cultivating the way. So, how lovely. This is called a Theragata. It's a story of, it's an enlightenment story. Someone's awakening step by step from, you know, refuse carrier to arhat in one poem. So, I really, really like that a lot. And it satisfies my bone-deep democratic nature, you know. So, here's the... Here's what I did with it to turn it into something singable. And I can't both play my guitar and operate my Macintosh at the same time. Is there anybody familiar with Macs who wants to slide it down while we go? Any heavy forefinger types? All right, go for it. So it's a pad. Here you go. I'll give you a... There we go. All right, so you just slide it down. That's all. Just slide on the pad. You have to put the cursor in there, and there you go. You need to click. But if you just put it into the...
Oh, into the field.
Yeah, and then there you go.
I don't suppose you can make it bigger.
We can make it bigger still. As long as we have an operator, we can make it really big. How about that? There we go. So what you do? Let's
hold it down.
If you put it here, and you got it. Want to try it? Okay. Where's the guitar? So this is Sunita transplanted to West Virginia.
It's talking to you.
Pay no attention. No. All right. I need to memorize this. Well, I was born poor in a lowly family. Father disappeared, there was little to eat. My work was degrading. I gathered withered flowers from the shrine, sold what I could, threw the rest away. People found me disgusting, and they despised me. They just ignored me, or they looked away. The pain of rejection hurt as much as the hunger, but I lowered my heart and I bowed every day. Saw the great hero entering the city, greatly awakened one with his monks in line, the most supreme of the Magadhans, walking like a lotus, pure and refined. Well, I lost all fear. I set down my pole and baskets. I drew near and I wanted to bow. And then he, the conqueror of Mara, stopped the line. He stood still out of kindness just for me. After showing reverence at the feet of the teacher, I stood to one side and I said these words. Oh, great sage, supreme among all beings, may I take refuge and leave home with you. The compassionate teacher raised one hand in a blessing with the sound of kindness for all the world. He said, come, monk, that was my ordination. I crossed over and my new life began. Now I live alone out here in the mountains. I never tire as I cultivate the way, following my teacher's words just as he taught me. With one mind by night and by day, as the sun went down, I entered samadhi. I saw my past lives and I got my heavenly eye. Just before dawn, I broke through the mass of darkness to the state of the deathless I did certify. Oh, the night was ending and the sun was returning. Indra and Brahma paid their respects to me. With their palms together, shining light, the way gods do with eloquence, they said these words to me. Well, homage to you, O thoroughbred of humans. Homage to you, human supreme. Your afflictions have ended, all your suffering is over. You, dear sir, are worthy of offerings. Upon seeing me, venerated by the devas, the teacher smiled and he proclaimed, through austerity, celibacy, restraint, and self-control, one becomes a Brahmin. He is a Brahmin supreme. Now, tell me, how many songs have you heard that include the line, austerity, celibacy, restraint, and self-control? One. Right. Can you imagine Led Zeppelin? No, I can't. There you go. All right. Okay, now, I'm always looking for these moments that could be sung in 2,500 years of Buddhist history, and there's lots and lots of them, by golly. And one of them has to do with my grand teacher, the spiritual teacher of Master Xuan Hua, our founder. His name is Empty Cloud, and his picture's on the back in the altar. Empty Cloud, as some of you know, his name in Chinese is Xu Yun, Xu Yun Lao Hua Shan. He lived to be 120 years old. And that, as a vegetarian, mind you. Look into that. I was just in China in October to celebrate the 50th anniversary of his entering Nirvana. He was the most influential monk in the last 200 years in China, for sure. And he has a remarkable biography. It spans, you know, two centuries. Actually, three, because if you add up the math. He was age 56 and woke up. And his enlightenment, his awakening, has been the subject of conversation and inspiration for a long time. This was entered Nirvana in 1959. So I wanted to share with you the story of Master Xu Yun's awakening. And here's how it goes. We need to... can't waste time. There's a lot to do here. So let's see. Try this now. He was 56 years old. He was living on Nine Flowers Mountain, Jiuhuashan, which is in Anhui province, kind of central China. He was there with a few hermits and Dharma friends, and they heard that Yangzhou Gaominsi was going to do a Chan retreat, which was 10 weeks long, 12 weeks long, and this was a chance to really do it. You know, it's a life and death Chan, birth and death Chan, they call it. And so he wanted to realize the Buddha nature within, and all his hermit buddies said, you go and save a spot for us, reserve a seat, because we're coming after you. You go first. So he went down the mountain, and he's walking a long way to Yangzhou, which is not too far from Shanghai. And he got to Reed Harbor and didn't have any money for the ferry, so he's walking along the river and slips and falls. It's spring and the river's high, and he falls in and he bumps downstream, hitting rocks, being, you know, sucked under alternately and going over rapids for 3 days, and he lands in a fisherman's net. And the fisherman pulls the net out and realizes he's netted a bhikshu, right? He's got, that's a heavy fish. So it's a monk. And the monk is more dead than alive, but these Chan monks were tough, living in the mountains by themselves, self-reliant. So he was not quite dead. And the fisherman called the monks at Baoji Monastery, which is nearby, and they came running down to see who it was, and they said, oh my God, it's Master De Qing. He's one of the famous monks. What's he doing in your fishnet? You know, bring him out. So they got him out and they dried him out. And 3 days later, just, you know, really weak, he said, I gotta get to Gaominsi. I'm carrying the reservations of four of my colleagues. I can't be late. He said, but you just rest for a while. You know, it'll still be there. No, I gotta go. So off he goes. And he gets to Gaomin Monastery and he, you know, stumbles in. And oh, they're so thrilled to see him because the way it is in China, what would it be like? If you knew that Jack Kornfield was going to be here for a week, right, people would come and sit. Joseph Goldstein is going to come and sit. People would go, you know, sign me up, you know. So when Master Xu Yun shows up at Gaominsi, they say, oh, here is the illustrious Xu Yun De Qing. Will you please be the proctor? You'll be the senior seated monk, and we'll advertise your name. And he said, I don't want to. I want to just meditate. He didn't say a word about what had just happened to him. Didn't say a word. Because he didn't want pity. These are tough characters. So they said, well, you know the rules. If we invite you and appoint you as the proctor and you refuse, we have to beat you. Why? Because Buddhist monasteries were much like the YMCA. It's just a place where everybody shows up and then leaves, right? And if somebody disobeys the rules, nobody wants to be an administrator. They all want to sit, you know. So he said, I know. I know the rules. So they take the what's called the incense board. It's a wooden sword, and they beat him, and he's bleeding, you know, and his aggravating his sickness. And he just silently endures it and doesn't want to be an administrator. He wants to just meditate. So he's more dead than alive, sitting on his meditation cushion. And don't you know that he's single-minded? He's not having any thoughts other than one breath at a time. All right, so there he is. And now the monks from Baoji Monastery show up with offerings for the monks who are meditating. And they go, oh, look, there is Shuyin Duching. Why is he bleeding? Don't you know what happened to him? And they go, what? No, what? He nearly drowned on his way here, you know. And what did you do? Did you beat him, you idiots? You know. And they go, oh, he didn't say anything, you know. It's the rules. So they now everybody's going, wow, this, what a model of intense, you know, total dedication to the Dharma. So 20 days into the retreat, suddenly his illnesses go away. And he's radiant, he's glowing. And so he reports in his biography, this is from his biography, that his mind was now completely quiet, no thoughts. He's just sitting at a single-pointed concentration. And he felt as if he were flying when he was walking. The night and day became one. And one night he went out to pee outdoors, and he saw everything was as if it were day, because he was seeing this transformation of his consciousness. He saw boats in the distance going up and down the Grand Canal there. And on the third evening of the eighth week of the session, it's a 12-week session, 8 weeks have gone by, and at night, for the last sit, the verger comes along and will fill your teacup. He's got a big, heavy, you know, coal-fired, wood-fired pot. And Master Shuyin held out his cup, and the verger missed and poured the scalding water on his hand. The cup shattered against the floor, and instantly he woke up. And as he says, he observed how he was joyous beyond words. At the sound of the shattering cup, the roots of his doubts were severed instantly. He was joyous beyond words at having realized his lifelong ambition. It was as if he'd awakened from a dream. He observed how the conditions of the past unravel. If he hadn't fallen into the river and become gravely ill, if he hadn't met the, quote, good advisors who beat him, pushed him to the limits of his endurance, and if he hadn't met both adversity and kindness, how could he have had this experience? So he penned two verses explaining the state, and this is the song. He says, the cup hit the floor with a ringing sound that echoed in the air. Empty space, too, broke to bits. My mad mind stopped right there. And then the second verse goes, burned my hand, shattered my cup. Broken for good, my mind. Like my family, it's lost. People are gone. Words are hard to find. All right, now let me just show you this one, what's magical about this. You couldn't get a more poignant statement of emptiness. This is somebody who's looked at despair in the face and found nothing there. There's no comfort in that emptiness, that once you see the complete conditioned nature of the universe, there's no room for sympathy, right? It's not that, you know, empty space likes me better because I'm a monk or I live in Berkeley or, you know, I'm a vegetarian. Like, empty space doesn't care, you know. It's just, it's empty. All conditioned things come together and come apart. That's the nature of them. Then, in the midst of that utter emptiness, spring is here. The flowers breathe their fragrance to the sun. Mountains, rivers, the earth itself are just the thus come one. The thus come one is the name for the Buddha, the one who has come thus. So right in the middle of that emptiness, the magical nature of existence manifests everywhere. It's all a gift. So there's both, they say, true emptiness and wonderful existence. Both wisdom that sees through the surface to the conditioned nature of all things and the compassion that finds the oneness of all creation and the magical gift that is your next breath is right there. So this poem has both sides, and it's a beautiful expression of that. So now this first verse, this first part of it, the cup hit the floor with a ringing sound, echoed in the air, empty space, too broke to bits, my mad mind stopped right there, in Chinese is 杯子扑落地, 象声鸣里里, 虚空分随也, 旷心当下息. So I use that as the chorus. And people have told me that they like this, in this song, the blend of high lonesome, kind of the Bill Monroe sound, and the Chinese quality of this that people don't expect, but once you hear it, it's completely there. And it's just that we're not familiar with it, that it sounds kind of novel, but it's been there all along. So here we go. Hit the floor with a ringing sound that echoed in the air. Empty space, too broke to bits. My mad mind stopped right there. Fades a pool o'di, shang shang ming li li. 虚空分随也，光心当下息。 Burned my hand, shattered my cup, broken for good my mind. Like my family, it's lost. People are gone. Words are hard to find. Fades a pool o'di, xiang sheng ming li li. Xu kong fan cui ye, huang xin dang xia. Spring is here, earth flowers breathe their fragrance to the sun. Mountains, rivers, the earth itself are just the dust come one. Fades a pool o'di, xiang sheng ming li li. 虚空分随也，光心当下息。 So that's Gaoming-si via West Virginia again, right? East Virginia. Right. Okay. Let's see here. Now. By golly, I have another, but I don't think we're going to have time for that one. So we'll save that for later. The one that I wanted to share, but won't have time to, because the story takes too long, is the story of how the sixth patriarch arose. I don't know if anybody has read the Sutra of the Sixth Patriarch, but he... It's called Robe and Bowl. I'll give you the sneak preview, tease you, all right? The fifth patriarch, Huang Mei, his name was Hongren Dashi, he wanted to pass on the Robe and Bowl. He was getting old, and it was time to pass on the Dharma to the next generation. And he didn't know who was qualified. So he staged a poetry slam. Absolutely he did. That's just exactly what he did. And from the poem, he essayed who had seen his mind. And it's a great story because the favored incumbent was a guy named Shunxiu. And Shunxiu was the senior monk there, and everybody thought, why bother submit a poem? He's the one. He's the favorite. Well, it turns out that Shunxiu had not seen his mind. He hadn't awakened. So he turned in a poem that goes, the body is a Bodhi tree, the mind a mirror stand bright. At all times, wipe it clean. Where can dust alight? And so the fifth patriarch looked at it and said, pretty good. Everybody who cultivates according to that will certainly gain great benefit. And then he went to Shunxiu and he said, nope, it's not up to the mark. You're still caught in duality. Okay, so out from the back of the monastery in the pantry area comes this young man, kind of quiet. He came from the south, probably spoke with Chinese with a drawl like this. Illiterate, couldn't write, couldn't read, and they considered him a barbarian because he, you know, he, ta jiang zhenguo hua jiu zheyang jiang, you know, that's Texas Chinese. So, and the panhandle at that. So, anyway, so he says, tell me that verse. I'd like to know, is it good? And they said, well, we'll read it to you. Why can't you read it yourself? No, I can't read. Oh, what a hick. You know, country bumpkin. So they said, the body's a Bodhi tree, the mind a mirror stand bright, at all times wipe it clean, let no dust alight. He said, that's pretty good, isn't it? He said, yeah, well, what do you care? He said, well, I got a verse. You? You can't even read or write. What kind of a verse do you have? He said, well, it's open to anybody, right? Why don't you write it for me? He said, well, okay, what's your verse? So they take a piece of coal on the white wall, and the young man, the barbarian from the south, says, the body is no Bodhi tree, the mind no mirror stand bright. Fundamentally, there's not one thing. Where could dust alight? And they all go, all right, that's interesting. So the fifth patriarch looks at it and goes, oh, no, no, he hasn't seen his mind. Scrapes it off the wall. Taps his staff three times, tonk, 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 which is Buddhist code for come to my room at the third watch tonight. You have to know the code, right? So the young man goes, gotcha. So in the third watch of the night, the young rice pounder goes to the patriarch's room, and the great master Hongren says, basically, I was number five, and you're number six. You're the one. Here's the robe and bowl. Now run. And sure enough, the next morning, when they woke up and realized that he was gone, they said, where's he gone? And the fifth patriarch says, he's the one. He got the robe and bowl. They pursued him, hoping to steal it by force. It was wild and woolly in the Tang Dynasty, in the Buddhist world. So, no joke. So he winds up crossing over everybody who's pursuing him. And he becomes, and mind you, he was a layman for this whole episode, right? He didn't shave his head till later. All right, so that's the story. I'll save the song for later, another time. The last one that we're going to finish with, and I actually, since he's here, I thought maybe we could invite Ginger to say a word or two. He's kind of the... How's it going, the year of the tiger?
Not bad.
How's it going? All right for you guys, year of the tiger. Did you notice? I hope you noticed.
I wanted to ask you, I was waiting for my appointment with the census guy today. Did anything happen?
Was that who it was?
Yeah, I was upstairs practicing for the lecture tonight.
Ah. Well, I didn't need him.
What happened?
I saw this guy. I mean, he rang the bell and you weren't there. He came around the back and I came down to greet him, and he saw me, and, you know, I had to pounce on him because he was running away. Can't imagine why. But what happened? Well, I licked him and asked for a form, and we got stuck, you know. I mean, it's Berkeley, and he was, I mean, ethnicity, you know. I mean, so I thought I'd have some fun, you know. It's kind of my nature, you know. Besides, I had him pinned to the ground. He couldn't do much, so I said, Sumatran. Because, I mean, if you're doing census, I mean, why leave the tigers out, you know? There's fewer and fewer of us all the time, so why not count us now? So I said, Bengali. Bengal tiger, you know, little joke, you get, you know. And then I said, East Indian and Javanese. And he was really upset at that point. So I said, call me I.
I?
Yeah, indigenous immigrant. He didn't get it. He didn't see the humor. So I just said, forget it. Detroit. Just call Detroit. Detroit Tigers.
So that's Ginger. He's actually, he does meditate. So. Okay, dedication of merit. True story. Here it is. This is the picture of Our Lady of Grace, Catholic monastery in Beech Grove, Indiana, on 9/18, right? This is 7 days, 8 days after 9/19, 8 days after 9/11. This is the Blessed Virgin here, and these are participants in a conference called Benedict's Dharma, where the Catholics are comfortable enough with the Buddhists at this point that our dialogue is so mature that they invited the Buddhists to make commentary to the rule of St. Benedict, which indicates a certain amount of trust. And the monastic side has been doing well. So everybody's hearts were very, very heavy at the time. You remember, a blend of rage, genuine terror, fear, grief, all of that. The planes had just started to fly again. And so we had been spending 3 days. Here is the organizer, Sister Meg, Sister Mary Margaret Funk, and that's me. This was back when. And she had asked me the night before to come up with a transference of merit, dedication of merit. And I was there with our former abbot of the City of 10,000 Buddhas. And so we took the dedication of merit that we do in the Theravada tradition. You're familiar with, how does it go? May the goodness that arises from my practice and from this act of sharing, you know, etc. So we have the same in the Mahayana tradition. So we translated the text, and I needed a tune. I didn't have a melody. So I was thinking, walking around, and Lorena McKennett's Dark Night of the Soul popped into my mind. And it fit perfectly. It was just astonishing how just meter and strophe, it was just foot by foot, it fit just right. So the next morning, with that printed out, we walked around the Blessed Virgin, and there were half of the attendees didn't come because they couldn't fly, but double that number came from the local community, because you remember after 9/11, the churches were full for 6 months, right? So everybody was there, Catholic or not. They came for trying to find refuge and solace. So we pulled out this newly mimeographed sheet, Dedication of Merit, and it was sung for the first time there. And this is me here explaining the song to everyone and saying that the idea is that when you have done something wholesome, such as gathering here on Thursday nights to look into your mind, to learn the techniques of Vipassana and the precepts that underlie this form of meditation, when you learn how to transform consciousness to wisdom and practice compassion, there is goodness in the doing of all of that. And even though it's invisible, some people would say that that is the actual has always been the power that transforms. They say that virtue is the power that cuts without harming. Virtuous people move us silently with the quality of their nature. So that goodness you can share. You can give it away. Use your mind like a broadcast tower and send out the goodness however you'd like. And when you do it together, it has real strength. So that's what I explained that day. And the song has now gone around and around. Lorena McKennett has blessed it, so I'm officially covering. It's an official cover of her melody. And please do now join me in putting your heart into a wish. In Judaism, it's tikkun olam, to repair the world. And I think it's probably the only thing that ever will, is the human heart dedicated to goodness. So please make that wish, and we'll transfer the merit. And James is here next week, or who's coming?
Wes.
Wes, okay. Great. Tikkun olam. Tikkun olam, to repair the world. T-I-K-K-U-N-O-L-A-M, repairing the world. Leave it a better place than it was before he came. As one and radiant with light, share the fruits of peace with hearts of goodness, luminous and bright. If people hear and see how hands and hearts can find in giving unity, may their minds awake to great compassion, wisdom, and to joy. May kindness find reward. May all who sorrow leave their grief and pain. May this boundless light break the darkness of their endless night. Because our hearts are one, this world of pain turns into paradise. May all become compassionate and wise. May all become compassionate and wise. Okay, may it be so. Tomorrow night here at the monastery, I will be standing in for the regular lecture and explaining the Six Patriarch Sutra. We're talking about the skandhas, the places, and the realms, the Buddhist description of what makes a human being. That's at 7:30. It's like this. It's 40 minutes of sitting followed by a lecture. And then Saturday night is my weekly sutra lecture on the Flower Adornment Sutra, which is talking about the Bodhisattva path. So previews of coming attractions, and people are welcome to come in and listen. Thank you so much. Please go mindfully.